This is the Ed Milet Show.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm excited about today, based on its timing, too. We're going to talk about mental health today, mental well-being, mental fitness, happiness, bliss, overcoming trauma, and all that kind of good stuff. And especially, you know, if you're listening to this around the holidays, some of you will listen to it 6 months from now, but the timing's right, too. And I'm so excited to have Dr. Frank Anderson with me today. Frank is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist and psychotherapist. So we're talking about an IQ gap that is pretty vast between the two of us today as you listen. But he's the author of a book called Transcending Trauma, which I was glued to. And I'm so excited to share his wisdom with you, his work and his insights as we help you with your mental well-being as well. So Dr. Anderson, thank you for being here, brother.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Ed. I really appreciate it. And please call me Frank.
All right, Frank, you got it. You call me Ed too. So I was reading a survey the other day that said about 24% of people report some form of mental illness or strife in their life.
Yeah.
Why do you think such a high percentage of people during such an interesting time in our culture are so unhappy? What do you think it is?
There's so many factors going on, really, from my perspective. I mean, clearly one of them is a pandemic. I mean, it has really got people in a place that they never thought they would be, and particularly the ongoing nature of it. You know, I've been studying the neurobiology of trauma, PTSD, and dissociation for a really long time, but this is an ongoing thing, and it's going on and on and on. And, you know, we've been through so many different waves of this so far, and people get really burned out. It's called adrenal fatigue. Your systems can't maintain it anymore. Our cortisol levels cannot sustain up, down. Oh, a vaccine. Oh, there's not another variant. Keep going. Don't go. Like, it's just too much for our systems. So it's wearing on everyone. And so there's that piece, right? And then there's the general world pre-pandemic. I mean, there's a lot of difficulties in the world and people are struggling. And, you know, 20% of the population is depressed at any one time outside of a pandemic.
This term PTSD. So, you know, I do a lot of reading about this stuff and I had an interesting upbringing. When I say interesting, there was some trauma there for sure.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people listening to this or watching it wonder, when I think of PTSD as a layman, first thing I think of is soldiers, combat,
yes,
right? That's the first
right.
thing I think most people think of.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, maybe some super dramatic issue that happens in one's childhood. But
right.
how would you define PTSD? How broad is there a spectrum of it? And how would you describe it?
Totally. Yeah, that's a great question, Ed. And it is a spectrum. I think trauma is a spectrum disorder. One of the things I say in my book is everyone has some kind of overwhelming life experience. Nobody gets away free of that. Okay. So, and people don't like this word trauma so much in the general public. They don't like the word PTSD. Oh, that's not me. Right. So I do really define trauma on a spectrum. It's an overwhelming life experience. And often it has to do with the perception of the person experiencing it. Right. You can be bullied on the playground at school and be like, whatever, no big deal. And somebody else, you know, your friend sitting next to you is bullied on the playground and has a horribly difficult experience with it, right? So it depends on the nature and the event of what happens. And it also depends on how the individual perceives it. You know, and we're talking about single incident, car accident, death of a loved one, being shamed, like who in the world hasn't been shamed at one point in their life, right? Ongoing, this piece, I don't know if you're aware of this, Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey wrote this book recently, and it has a lot to do with ongoing relational trauma. Okay, so there's a piece of relational trauma, we call that complex PTSD, right? And that's where most family dysfunction comes in. Right. When you're relationally, you know, whether it's drinking, yelling, screaming, neglect, there's a lot of stuff that happens in families that is considered dysfunctional and traumatic, and it has an effect on people, you know, which is different than that whole other spectrum where people are kidnapped and beaten and raped. That's one extreme. So I really do see trauma on a spectrum, and nobody's free of it.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. I'm so glad you said it that way. Cause I think a lot of people maybe discount things that have happened. These emotions are installed in our neurochemistry when we're young, when certain things happen or when we're older. And I have, it's a weird analogy, but I want to, I want in a minute, guys, we're going to talk about how do you overcome these things, right? The weird thing I want to share with you, I just was thinking about in preparing for this. As I was preparing to be with you, I have two little Pomeranians. And one of them is this joyous Pomeranian, little Lily's her name. And she's been with us all her life. She's had a pretty blissful, you know, lifetime. My other one, Daisy, we took from someone. And the kind of the our groomer asked us to take her. And she had been left in cars and had neglect and all these other things. And there's these associations she makes with different things where she'll just, like yesterday, we won't take her for a walk. Any walking outside the house, she just begins to shake and tremble. And so there's this connection she's made with certain circumstances, places, and things like anchors or triggers almost.
You got it.
That I think that, that humans have these anchors and triggers. Many times we're unaware of them. So can you take us through what happens to us when trauma happens, some type of trauma? And what is an anchor and or a trigger? What I'm at least using my own terminology for that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No, you're doing a great job, honestly. You've done your homework. Let me say that, Ed, because it's true. So anytime anyone has an overwhelming experience, it's stored in their body. Okay. And it can be stored in any number of ways. You can store it emotionally. You can store it physically in your body, and you can store it in thoughts and beliefs. So anytime we go through something overwhelming, it's stored inside. And then what ends up happening, Ed, is that we have this series of ways to try to protect ourselves. It's the normal response. So in the work that I do, which is called internal family systems, you develop protective parts of yourself that try to protect you from your overwhelming experiences. Most people, and we'll call them defenses, you know, but they're protections, okay? That you protect yourself from your pain. And so what ends up happening, if you have an overwhelming experience in childhood, college, whatever, it's still stored. You think it's gone, but it's not. So anytime it gets triggered, if you get yelled at as an adult by your boss, it triggers those wounds that are still in there. And then your protectors jump in. You yell, you scream, you drink, you do whatever. So our protectors show up once our wounds get triggered. Okay. And this is what happens for people. You know, people come into therapy, Ed, they don't say, hey, I want to work on the fact that I was unloved by my mother or father. Like, that's not what people come into therapy. Right. They're like, I'm having trouble with my kids. I'm getting in trouble at work. I'm unhappy. This is my third relationship. Like, those are the protective parts that are not doing so well in somebody's life, but they're really rooted in their trauma. Right. Mm.
Is it always people or circumstances, or can it actually be places? I've had this belief system that sometimes I think someone could actually walk into a room that resembles a room where trauma happened, or a space or a moment. They find themselves 4 hours later at work, sad and down and not knowing why. And there was a trigger that happened when they walked in. Even I know I'm going pretty deep here, but I want everyone in the audience to kind of get everything they can. Can spaces also be triggers?
100%. People can be triggers. You look at somebody, you're like, oh my God, that reminds me of, even though it's not the same person. Spaces can be triggered. Getting on airplanes can be triggered. Being in the backseat of a car. Like, there's so many things, because whatever environment that you were in that was overwhelming, people encode that, you know? So I've heard somebody say, oh my God, when I was being abused, I was staring at the doorknob. Because that's what I focused on. And so doorknobs are scary for them. Do you know what I mean? Can be anything. And most people aren't aware of the triggers. They think it just comes out of the blue, but it doesn't come out of the blue. There's always trailing it back to the trigger of what activated the thing that happened to you in your past.
What if you don't know? Is that why therapy is so important? Because I think a lot of people avoid therapy, which can be all the way to the sophisticated work you do, where there's this integrated, you know, current neuroscience stuff you're doing and the internal family systems, to just having somebody to talk to. Why do you think therapy has such a stigma to it? And is that the pathway to correcting this? Or can someone just become more aware if it's minor things and actually begin to live better just by their awareness?
Yeah, it's a great question, I have to tell you, because, you know, it depends on where you live within the country, right? If you're living in the Boston area, New England, or you're living in California, those people are therapy heavy. Like, everybody has a therapist, right? So it depends on the region that you live in around the stigma. You know, in a lot of places in the Midwest, a lot of places in the South, like, And cultural differences too, Ed, honestly, like certain cultures are into therapy. Yes, let's get help. That makes sense. Other cultures, absolutely not. No way. So it depends on where you live. It depends on the region. But there is generally a stigma around mental health because people are like, I don't need help. I'm strong. I'm not weak. Like people call vulnerability, right? Go to therapy. Mm-hmm. I'm vulnerable. Forget that crap. I don't want to be weak and vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I love Brené Brown so much. She calls vulnerability a superpower, not a weakness, right? And I agree with that. So one of the things I do, honestly, when I work with any adolescent, I want to give them the experience of asking for help can be a good thing. Like if a kid learns that, it's a game changer for them, you know? So people have this, I'm not weak, I don't need this. And in fact, they end up falling apart, getting it, their life is a mess. And then they go reluctantly. But honestly, I'm going to say instead of 9 times out of 10, it's honestly 10 times out of 10. It's rooted in something from your past that you have buried to get away from. People get away from pain. You know, it's like the caveman. Touch the fire hurts. Oh, don't touch the fire anymore. It's kind of like that. We're organized to stay away from pain.
Okay? Don't you think sometimes you can evaluate yourself? I mean this, I don't mean that therapy isn't necessary because I'm a huge believer. I also think there's an economic aspect sometimes to therapy. But I'm aware of patterns of my own that I know come out of some of the, what I would call trauma in my childhood. It could just be dysfunction. It could be your parents didn't ever hug you, right? Or no one said, I love you, or they were in a divorce. It. That's trauma that fits under that spectrum.
Yes.
But for me, one of the things that I'm super sensitive to is people being honest with me to an extreme, or what are you really doing when you're away from me to an extreme.
Yeah.
And so it's affected relationships that I've been in my life. And I've evaluated that's because my dad was doing things I didn't know he was doing and couldn't trust that he was doing. So I think sometimes just being aware of your current patterns of behavior can help you draw the line backwards to potentially what that trauma was. Now, in terms of solution, and you can comment on that if you'd like, but in I just want to share that with the audience from me. And there's other things like anyone around me gets too drunk, too excess. Some people think that's cool and fun. For me, it's like, oh, that's, I want to be away from them so badly because I experience that stuff.
So
I'm curious though, you have the 8 C's of what you call self energy in the book, which is awesome. And I don't want to give away everything because I want people to get the book. And by the way, this is 2%. So get the book, everybody. Yeah. But can you take us through what self energy is and how that works? And maybe what the 8 C's are, if you can pull them off the top of your head.
Totally. I'll see how many I'll come up with at the top of my head. But it, you know what? It's interesting. So a couple things. I want to tell you one of my favorite quotes from my book is trauma blocks love. Love heals trauma. Okay. And it's a cyclical piece. Trauma blocks love and connection. It blocks who we are.
Mm.
And in fact, love and connection is what heals trauma.
Wow. Very good. Very good.
Okay. Okay. And I believe this is my mission. It really is my mission because you don't have to go to therapy in some ways. This is why I'm bringing this to the public is you're talking about self-awareness, self-connection, this idea, this mindset to do better. So it's super important. Okay. I want this message to get to as many people as possible. That's why I'm moving outside the therapy room into the general public, right? And I appreciate shows like this to help me get that message out, right?
We're getting it out, brother, for sure.
I love it. I love it. Thank you for that. And so everyone has this thing that we call self-energy. It's inherent wisdom and healing capacity. And I believe we're born with it. It's not something that needs to be cultivated. And believe me, a lot of people with severe trauma, I don't have it. I'm broken. I'm empty. And you know what I say to them? We can agree to disagree. You have it in you. You have that wisdom and healing capacity. This is why I say sometimes, so maybe everybody doesn't have to go to therapy. You have what you need inside of you and let me help you access it. Okay.
Beautiful. This is great.
It's accessing that wisdom within, right? And I call it a state of being. And, you know, because it's a model and it has mnemonics, we say the 8 C's. Okay.
Sure.
But I'll say some of the C's, right? Compassion, calm, curious, connected, courageous. There probably is another one, I think, or another
creativity.
Couple. Creativity. There you go. Creativity. And I don't want people to think it's a C word per se. It's just, that's the model mnemonics. Love, openness is part of self-energy. It's a state of being. You could say something like this to somebody. Yeah, I'm compassionate. Or you could say, oh, yeah, I really care. Right? Do you feel the difference?
Absolutely, yes.
That's what I'm talking about. It's not a word. It's a state of being. It's I'm open. I'm receptive. And it's not only toward other people. It's toward the parts of us that have been through the trauma. Okay? So what we do is we turn self-energy inward. Can I be compassionate and loving towards the part of me that was beat up as a kid, toward the part of me that was shamed and bullied on the playground? Like, because what we tend to do, remember I said those protectors push it away to protect us from the pain? The method here is accessing self-energy and bringing it in toward loving yourself, loving the pain that you went through. Right? That's the healing quality here, is that I call it internal attachment work. We're healing the internal wounds. And we have the capacity within us to do that. I just want to help people get there.
That is so beautiful. I really hope everybody hears that, because there's this debate, by the way, the eight: compassion, curiosity, calm, clarity, connectedness, confidence, courage, and creativity. These are all things that you have access to within you. And there's this great debate sometimes on social media, especially in the entrepreneur space. There's a lot of entrepreneurs, not all, but many follow my work, and they make fun of this. Oh, self-love, but you don't want to change anything about yourself. And that's not what we're discussing here. What we're saying is that you have access within you, or you're saying rather, and I'm agreeing with that, you have access and the ability to love yourself, even though there are things about you. I think sometimes there's this stacking that happens where there's some trauma that happens. So we create these coping mechanisms, whether it is drinking or cheating or lying or disassociation or whatever those things might be. Then we act out and behave in ways that we're not proud of.
Right.
Right. And then it stacks. Then we find ourselves at 20, 30, 40, 50 years old with this stack of stuff we've done or behaviors we've taken place in that we're not proud of. And now it's like a double stack. The stuff happened to me. I don't really know why I'm doing this, but I've lied, I've cheated, I've stole, I've whatever I've done. And there's this stack. So I was a little bit curious about the idea of forgiveness of oneself as well.
Yeah.
And I know it's not necessarily part of the book per se, but there's little pieces that kind of allude to it. What about that? Like, is that part of what you would call compassion for oneself, is forgiveness? Does it fall under there? Or what would you say about that?
Totally. So forgiveness is a big piece of it, honestly. And there is the forgiveness of yourself, the parts of you that work so hard to try to protect you.
Yes.
That have done untoward things. Okay. Yes. Those protective parts, the parts that drink, that yell, that scream. The reason we yell at our kids is because their behavior triggers our wounds. Whoa. So we try to stop them from doing that so our wounds don't get activated. Right. So those protective parts, I'm always looking at the intention of them, not the effect of them. The drinking, the cheating, the lying, the intention is to protect my pain.
That's big.
The effect is it causes what I call a double trauma in our life. Because like you just said, Ed, it's not only that I'm dealing, pushing away my childhood, this wounding. Now I have to deal with the fact that all the behaviors that were rooted to protect me have caused more trouble in my life.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So we're looking at the positive intention of every part. Suicide, cutting. You know, suicide is one of the most effective protections. If it gets bad enough, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And we say to the suicidal part, thank you for having a solution to this problem when nobody else was there to help you. Okay. Embrace it. Heroin epidemic, same thing. People are doing all opioids, heroin, to protect from their pain because they don't have another option yet.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking about, by the way, I'm loving this. And it's interesting for me. I'm 50 years old. It's just now maybe at this stage of my life that I reflect more on stuff that did happen when I was a kid. And because there's like double-edged swords on these coping mechanisms. I don't know if you agree with this or not.
That's but some of the things I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Like for example, for whatever reason, I kind of got my dad's attention. If I, at least I thought I did, probably isn't even fair to say, but I'd get my dad's attention when I'd hit a home run or when I'd get an A or when I'd perform. Yeah. So to some extent that coping mechanism has helped me become a wealthy man, helped me become an influential man, helped me become a very hard worker.
Yeah.
But there's the other side of this. So let's address this. Sometimes these coping mechanisms also are difficult to break because, for example, in business, my edginess or anger, it's why I'm so successful. I don't want to lose that part of me, even though I know it's not very healthy because it helps me do this other thing that I do very well.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So how do you navigate that where you go, I want to keep the good things about this coping mechanism I've got, but I want to drop the part of it that's detrimental to me and the people around me.
Yeah, it's exactly what we do is because we embrace, I call them the gifts and the burdens of every part.
Okay.
Right? We don't get rid of parts of us. Okay? We get rid of the job it was forced to do.
Oh, it's so good.
Right? Mm-hmm. We don't get rid of like the drinking part. Like let's take a drinking part, for example. I say, what if you didn't have to drink all the time? Are you interested in that? What if you didn't have to? What if it could be a choice, right? Mm-hmm. So we help release the stuff we had to do to protect the wound. Mm-hmm. And then we keep the stuff we want to do, okay? Mm-hmm. And the only way these parts of us stop doing what they need to do, Ed, is by healing the wound.
Gotcha.
If I heal the wound, I don't need to do this stuff anymore. I could choose to. We don't get rid of any of our parts. We get rid of the job they were forced to do.
So good.
To protect the pain.
Like so that. Good.
You see what I mean? Like that's what it is. And they have good things. I had this like smart was who I was. Like I thought that is me. Like that's me. And I had an identity crisis when I was like, wait a minute, smart is a part of me, not all of me. I was like, holy crap, who am I then? Right.
Yes.
But look, I can still hold on to my intelligence, but it doesn't have to dominate every aspect of my life now. I could be playful. I could be fun. I can have a blast with my kids. You know what I mean? Before it was dominating me because it was working overtime to protect me. I don't get rid of it, but it's an aspect of my personality that's been valuable.
So I just really feel strong. Everyone should go back and listen to this last part that we covered because there's this spectrum, right? We've talked about of the different types of trauma, but what should be occurring to all of us, like life should have an element of self-reflection at every age.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes we're just so busy in achieving and doing and caring for other people that we never take, guys, this could just be as simple as you starting to take some time and being more aware of yourself, some time in meditation, some time for a walk that's not just to work out, but it's just to be with yourself, to evaluate your patterns and emotions and what you're feeling regularly, and just to do a little work on you. At the end of that next year, 2022, you'd be a better person. You will have grown. And so I just want everyone, if you want something complex where you're going to go to therapy, you're going to do psychotherapy, you're going to have a friend you talk to, you're going to pray more, you're going to just observe your patterns, you're going to, whatever it might be, self-reflection and self-awareness is a pathway to more bliss in your life. And it's getting books like your book. It's listening to shows like my show. It's just starting to work on oneself. How do you know, Frank, if you have any PTSD, are there signs that I have had some kind of trauma I might be unaware of? And again, remember guys, PTSD could be you weren't hugged enough all the way to real abuse in your life, right? There's the spectrum, but how does one know? Are there any underlying signs that I have some or does everybody?
It's a great question. And I will deal with that in a minute. I want to just add on to what you said, because it was really important. I was thinking to myself, I'm like, this is what I talk about in the book, self-awareness, self-connection. And you just came up with it on your own. But that is what this is about, right? Self-awareness, self-connection in its simplest forms. And I also like to say, Ed, like, Take advantage of each moment. Mm. What are you going to do with this moment? Are you going to learn from it? Mm. Are you going to repeat it? Are you going to ignore it? Like when you talk about, okay, let's look at the end of 2022. What did I do with my moments? Like, I think we're all here to learn. We're all here to grow. Mm. Or we just repeat it, right? So you can just take stock in your moment. Like it's the moment. Like, all right, bad time with the kid. Really difficult interaction at work. Like, take your moment. And what are you going to do with that moment?
By the way, profound. I don't want to interrupt you because it's so beautiful. But this thing you said, I just want to highlight, which is if you don't, you'll repeat it.
Totally.
You're just going to have another, it's going to be the same, a different boyfriend, but the same guy. Different girlfriend, same person. Different friendship, different business, different level of results, same emotions. Yeah. Same patterns if you're not aware. So I just want to acknowledge what you said, the profoundness of it.
Let me add to that, because the underlying reason of that is our wounds are looking for redemption unless they're healed. Okay. You keep going for the same guy or the same girl. Maybe it's an upgraded version, but it's the redemption of our wounds. Okay. And if you don't address your wounds,
Wow. That's so good.
This so good. Ed, is why there's a 50% divorce rate in the world, honestly, because we keep looking for, you're going to be the father or the mother that I never had. You're going to love me in the way that I never was. It's the repeating the pattern, but looking for redemption instead of healing it and then looking for something that's healthy. So I want to point that out for people.
So right? Huge. No, that's, I've right? never heard that. And that is a wow. Okay. So how do you know you had signs of it? What's some of the signs you have some of this PTSD?
Well, so exactly. So that, you know, when you keep repeating stuff, like when you can't get out of your own way, why am I doing this again? You know, why am I here again? And honestly, PTSD is under the category of anxiety disorders. Like in the books and all this stuff, in the DSM, if you will, it's an anxiety disorder. So are you overwhelmed? Are you anxious? Are you reactive a lot? Do you go from high to low? Like a lot of times people with PTSD, honestly, get misdiagnosed as bipolar because it's mood swings. Right? Do you have a lot of mood swings? Do you crash after you get triggered and have periods of depression? You withdraw, you disconnect, right? Because you can go from, holy crap, I'm freaking out, to who cares? What's the point? I give up. Those are these mood swings, which are really different parts reacting and responding. So there is anxiety, there's panic, there's depression. PTSD is kind of hard to diagnose, interestingly enough, and many people misdiagnose this because it's got so many facets to it, right? And it's got a lot of what we call comorbidities. People are anxious, they have eating issues, you know, eating disorders, substance abuse issues. Like when somebody comes in with a list of stuff, it's most likely rooted in trauma. Okay. Wow. ADD, another one, huge overlap with PTSD, interestingly enough.
And you know, we could change trauma out just for pain. You know, it's interesting with achievers, the ones that I work, some of the top, you know, whether it's an athlete or an entertainer or a politician or whatever, sometimes they're, it's interesting, all the things you've listed. And then when they begin to achieve, there's this thing they start to do with themselves. And a lot of people are going to go, oh my gosh, I do this right now. Is it really worth it? What's it all mean? Right. Once they start to get somewhere, they'll feed themselves because they should be blissful and joyous and proud. The only way to rob themselves from it now is it doesn't matter. It was all for nothing. It cost me all these other things. So I'm curious about the relationship part. Let's say I've got whatever I've got, my baggage, my patterns, my things. What if you interact, you're in a relationship though? Let's flip it. It's not so much us, but maybe it still is, but we're in a relationship with someone who clearly has these patterns, clearly is overcoming, protecting themselves, trying to heal some form of trauma, whether that, and it could be minor to extreme. Is there, what advice would you give for interacting with someone who keeps acting out in a particular way? And is there a point where you should separate from somebody, whether it's a friend, a loved one, a spouse, et cetera, a parent? What would your advice be there?
Yeah, so that's the whole couples issue. Like when you're in, and you don't even have to be in an intimate relationship, but you're talking about what if you're in relationship to someone who has a trauma history?
Yes.
All right. So it's not a coincidence. There's usually a dynamic there. Okay. I hate to say it. Okay. I hate to bust people's bubble. The people who are, you know, pointing out the other person's issue, because usually in that case, there'd be somebody who's activated, screaming, yelling, reactive. And there's the passive one. The one who tolerates it, the one who enables it, the one who is drawn. People tend to be drawn to each other because there's similar wounding, even though they tend to show it differently.
Wow.
Okay. So somebody could be like, typical example, and I'm going to use these gender stereotypes. Oh my God, she's so hysterical. She's so overwhelming with her feelings. Oh my God, he's on the spectrum. He can't connect with anybody. You know, such a typical male-female gender dynamic, right? Yes. And the reality is both of them have wounds underneath that are similar, because attraction is about the similarity in wounding. Okay. So you may look totally different. It's much easier to blame the other person. But what I say to that is do the U-turn. What about me has been drawn to this person? What is going on for me that keeps me in this relationship? Okay. It's much easier to point the finger at the louder, screaming, yelling version compared to the numb, dissociated, passive, or disconnected version. And there's usually that dynamic. Okay. So it's rarely do I see a couple where both don't have trauma histories of sorts, like you say. However, they cope with it in seemingly opposite ways.
Yes. Does someone by the way, that's brilliant. And does someone eventually become so toxic to you that you should cut them out of your life?
Absolutely. Like, you know, usually if it's that toxic and you don't have a trauma history, you break up with them. You don't end up marrying them. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, whoa, this does not resonate with me.
But what if you have that thing where you're like, you're going to fix them? You know what I'm saying? A lot of people have that. I'm going to fix him. I'm going to fix her.
Welcome to every therapist I've ever met, by the way. Okay. And I'm a person in that group. Yeah. I was such a caretaker. You don't go into the field unless you're a massive caretaker.
Okay.
Okay.
So, you know what you do though, Frank? I got to tell you what you do. And I love this of brilliant people. And that is that, you know, as you're listening to this, you can hear his brilliance, realize he's Harvard trained. But what you do that I love is that you take incredibly complicated and complex issues and solutions and make them simple and easy to understand, because you don't have this need any longer to be the smartest guy in the room. You just are. And so that's why this is so helpful. I keep telling you, this is my favorite, because I just really, really believe this is making a difference for people. Yeah. So you do think maybe someone might need to be eliminated. Let's talk about a few solutions now. What is a corrective emotional experience? Let's give everybody the gift of what that is and have you explain that.
Yeah. So a corrective emotional experience, it really is what I call a redo.
Okay.
So you're repeating your pattern, And a corrective emotional experience is when you do it differently, the moment that you do it differently. Okay. For example, now this could be in relationship with somebody else, but it's also within yourself. Okay. And what we like to do is this is, so in therapy, sometimes there's this idea that the therapist is the corrective experience for you. I'm going to be everything you needed and wanted and never got in life. Ed, you're going to internalize that and you're going to skip off into the sunset and be happy, right? People are searching for the corrective emotional experience outside of themselves all the time. Now, sometimes relationships are healing. Okay. The relationship with my partner is a corrective emotional experience. It really, he's like wonderful for me. He's been that person in a way that's been amazing. Okay. So that is there, and we can get that from other people. However, oftentimes these people are not who we needed and wanted them to be, and then it becomes a big failure. Okay. So you've got to think about shifting and working internally to have the corrective emotional experience within. This is where real healing comes. That you remember that self-energy thing I talked about?
Yes. Yep.
Self-energy can give that little boy, little girl inside what it needed and wanted and never got. It's the true redo. Okay. It's the true redo. And it's through self-love, self-acceptance, and self-connection, just like you talked about. And if I give it to myself, then I am going to have different experiences in my relationships with other people, because I'm not going to need them to make me feel better. Okay. So corrective emotional experiences can be useful in life and our relationships. It's like, I could remember the moment I'm like, wow, this is different. I'm not doing what I used to do. And this person isn't responding in the ways that I typically have people respond to me. Right. Yeah. So you could have a corrective emotional experience. It feels different. It lands different within you. You're like, oh, this is different. The way we get there is by giving to ourselves what we didn't get and always wanted. Like, can I treat myself with respect? Can I love myself? Can I value myself? Because when I give it within, I don't need it desperately from somebody else. I can have it with somebody else. It's an option versus a desperation.
I'm just letting that sit there for me. Yes.
Yeah.
Because, and is there a practical way I can give that to myself? In other words, an application of that? Is it just as, is it as simple as saying, you know, I'm actually going to give myself a break when I make a mistake? Is it repeating to yourself that you love yourself? Is it feeding yourself a highlight reel of all the good things you've done in your life? Like, what is something practical I can do that give myself that gift?
Yeah, I'm not a, you know, I'm not a big affirmations person, because affirmations aren't authentic. It's like, convince yourself you love yourself. Didn't work for me. Like, doesn't work. So for me, it's got to be, can I connect? It really goes back to the self-connection. What do I feel? What do I need and want? Because we're taught to disconnect from ourselves to keep the connection with our parent.
Yes.
Okay. You have to, kids have to connect to the parent to survive. So they disconnect from themselves. So it's as easy as It's as simple as, what do I want? What do I feel? Okay. When you can connect to what you feel, right? I can't tell you how many people said, I knew this relationship was crappy, but I married him anyways.
Yeah.
We know what we feel. We disconnect from it, right?
Yes.
So it's simple moments. It's taking the pause. What do I want to go to that holiday party? You know, I really don't. Could I take the risk and not go?
Yeah.
Because other people don't care as much as we think they care.
That's true.
Actually. And then I'm treating myself kindly, even a moment. It's like, oh, huh. And so each time you treat yourself kindly, you're giving yourself a corrective experience.
Very good.
Each
I just
time,
gave myself one then. I did that this year. I love sharing these things with my audience when someone says something brilliant, just an application for me. I really took a look at my, and asked myself the question you said, and you said so many brilliant things there. I want to make sure I just repeat the one that stands out to me, which was, what is it that I really want or need right now?
Yeah.
And for me, I've had all these different things in my life. I've had anxiety, I've had frustration, I've had depression. I've also had, there have been moments of my life of joy and bliss and ecstasy and passion and expectation. And I found for me, I've never had peace.
Yeah.
What I really want is peace. Yeah. At my childhood, there was no peace. It was loving, many, many times loving. Awesome.
Right.
And then sometimes not. And I've not had peace. I finally said, Ed, what do you really want that you don't have that I can access within myself anytime I want?
Right.
And it was peace. And I've really done work this year on giving myself the gift of more peace, noticing more gratitude, putting myself in situations that bring me peace and avoiding ones that don't. I haven't done a great job of it.
Yeah.
I've done a better job of it. I'm making progress towards more peace. It wasn't just one decision and, it's done. I've got peace. No, I have tons of patterns and people and situations in my life that are around me that aren't peaceful.
Yeah.
But slowly but surely, I'm creating more peace in my life. So I love that you said that. And it's a direct application for me in my life. Now, one thing I've never struggled with, but most people do, that I want to ask you about, complete right turn here.
Yeah.
I don't struggle with making decisions. I'm a decisive person. I've never had this fear of this is right or this is wrong. Yeah. Oftentimes I think I might make both of these things work.
Yeah.
But I find that so many people struggle with anxiety and fear over making a decision, especially one that might be bold, like a career change or ending a relationship or starting a relationship or starting a business. Yeah. So what would you say to someone who deals with high levels of anxiety and fear about making decisions in their life?
Yeah. So it's, I wish it was a little bit simpler. I'd like to say a bullet or two. Okay. Yeah. But the thing that I would say about fear around making decisions is you really have to look at what the underlying issue is relative to the fear. For example, some people are afraid to make decisions because they're afraid of the loss. Is it this house or that house? Mm-hmm. If I choose this house, that means I can't have that house, right? Oh, okay. So that's a loss issue. So the root of that is I'm afraid I may lose something. Okay. Mm-hmm. Other people fear, because fear is usually what's around decision-making problems, right? Mm-hmm. If I choose this, if I say, no, I don't want to go to the party, they might not like me. The relationship may be over. I may hurt somebody. I may disappoint somebody. So I'm afraid to make this decision based on what the other person might feel about me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're always looking at what is underneath the decision. So there's a lot of reasons why people have a hard time making decisions, honestly, you know, and it's so interesting because my son, the other day, and I was saying, we had gone home for a family visit. And I said, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell your parents what you really, even as adults, tell your parents what you really want, because you're afraid that they'll be disappointed in you, or you're afraid, you know, of their reaction. People are so afraid of feelings, my own or somebody else's. And I loved what my son said. He's like, well, that's not a problem for me. I tell you what I feel all the time. And I was like, yes, I did one thing right. You know what
I mean? That's exactly right.
Right. We do. Yep. We're afraid of the feelings of others, whether it's feelings of loss for ourselves, feelings of how somebody's going to think about us. So it's so rooted in emotion. And fear is just a top layer of that, honestly. Really, what it ends up being is this, is that most people's fear is based in their inability to tolerate emotions, okay? Whether it be my own emotions, oh my God, I'm going to be hurt, I'm going to be sad, someone's not going to like me, or tolerating somebody else's emotion, like they may not like me, they may be disappointed in me, I may lose the connection. You know, so fear of decision making is usually rooted in inability to tolerate emotion in one way or another.
I have to take back what I just said. Now that you said that, I do struggle with making decisions in personal relationships.
Yeah.
For the exact reason you just said.
And
by the way, the exact scenario you just described, it's right now when we're doing this, it's the holidays. Yeah. And I've had multiple situations like that. Yeah. Where I was just riddled with anxiety about them. Right. Maybe they'll never invite me back. Maybe I can't, even though I had very legitimate reasons that I couldn't go.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I'd say I'm a very decisive person. I think that's more in business or in, you know, that kind of stuff. But then in that other area, personal, there's still these underlying fears that I'm working on myself. So you did say something I'm really glad you brought up, because I want to ask you about this. So for many people, and it doesn't have to just be the holidays, but it is the holidays while we're recording this, but it could be just randomly at any time. They're going to be around family members.
Yeah.
Some of which are negative, some of which are triggers, like we've described earlier. And they, you know, going in, I'm going to see uncle blah, 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 or aunt this, or a parent, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so, and going into it creates tremendous anxiety for people, tremendous angst. What counsel would you give if you know you're going to be going into an environment, a place, people that are likely to trigger you in a particular way, or just, man, they're just going to change your outlook and your energy?
Yeah, there's so many things, you know, and by the way, I love saying this. I'm not only the hair club president, I'm a member of this group, right? I go home to my family too. It's the same thing. I cannot help it, because we all slip into these old roles with family.
It's so true.
We slip into these old roles. So you get pulled back in to the family dynamic, which makes it harder. So you kind of lose stability. You lose your competence in the world when you slip back into family, right? Yeah. And so it really is tricky for people, you know, everybody wants the holidays to be perfect. Like watch the damn TV, all these beautiful moments, Hallmark moments, whatever. That is not reality. Right. We all bring all of us to each family dinner. I'm not just bringing the good parts of me. I bring the good parts and the bad parts of me. And so does everybody else sitting at that table. So like this idea that it's going to be perfect is ridiculous. Like I always think about expectations, right? And especially, Ed, now with the pandemic, and some people haven't even seen their family in 2 years.
True. Right?
I'm going to visit my parents at the end of the month. I haven't seen them in a year and a half. Right. Wow. So the expectations are enormous for perfection.
Mm.
Red flag, like it ain't going to work that way. Right. Mm. So you've got to deal with expectations. And the thing I like to say to people is this: what are my expectations? What am I actually wanting out of this? Is it the perfect ham? Is it the best present? Or is it like real connection? You know, like what do I want out of this? Like, what are my expectations? And also, we assume we know what other people's expectations are. Like, ask your mother, ask your brother, what are they wanting out of this holiday? They actually may want something different. Ask your kids. Because what we do is we throw our kids with us. Right? Yes. Tom, you're going to enjoy this. This is important. Like, what are your expectations here? What do you want to accomplish here? Right? It reminds me, for anybody who has kids and who's been to Disney World, you spend all this money. You want it to be the best moment of their lives. And it's a shit show, excuse me. It is terrible, right? Yep. It's because our expectations are way unrealistic. And they don't meet reality. Like, so bring it down to reality. What if actually you connected with people in ways that you love them and care about them and things you have in common? Because there's this way that all the political decisions, discussions, all the vaccine, blah, blah, blah. Like, why do we need to get into the differences instead of what we have in common? There's this way that people show up with their differences because they want to be seen and heard, right? And what I say is this: we have more in common than we are different.
Yeah.
And I would rather focus on the similarities versus the differences. It just happened to me recently. Went to visit my husband's family, and they started in politically.
Here you go.
Yep. And I was like, I'm not interested. I was like, you know what? I love you guys. It's been such a long time. How about so-and-so? And I kind of changed the subject.
Very good. That's a great technique because,
you know,
isn't it odd? Because I used to do this with my dad. Politically, we would disagree on stuff. Right. It was like, of all the things, I love this man and we have so much in common and we love so many of the same people and the same things. Why in the world am I picking the 2% of the things we don't agree on and the rare time I get with him?
Yeah, it's because we want them to know us. It's because we want them to know us instead of us getting to know them. You know, Ed, it's called theory of mind. It's the capacity to step outside of yourself and see if you can see what's important for them, right? When I travel around the world, and before pandemic, I used to travel around the world teaching IFS and trauma and internal family systems and all. And what I will tell you is trauma and the resiliency of the human spirit are everywhere. We all have that in common. And so I want to tell people, like, join what you have in common over the holidays. You may have a much better time.
It's so good, so profound. And the reason that you described, I never thought before, is we want them to know us instead of us just connect and meet them where they are.
Right.
At least we know why we do it. That's so powerful. Okay. I got one last question.
Well, I'll just say this. The more you know them, the more they are genuinely curious to get to know you.
So true. That's true in everything, by the way, business, right? Relationships, family, everything. I love when I play golf with someone for 4 or 5 hours and they'll tell a mutual friend of mine, man, I love Ed. And then he'll say, what does he do? Because we spent the 4 or 5 hours talking about them, right? Yeah. And then the next time we'll probably talk about me. So you're so right. Okay, last question. I've enjoyed this so, so much. And I'm so glad it's happening at this time for both my audience, but also for me. This is just wonderful. Great. Last thing is this tough one. You had trauma in your life, and a lot of people take that trauma they've been through, whether it's they've survived cancer or they've lost a business or they were divorced or there was some form of abuse in their life or whatever it might be. And they then attach their identity to that trauma. I'm this survivor. Yes. I went through, and their entire life becomes attached to this identity of their trauma, and they never escape it. It's obvious to me why it happens, but it's a sad thing to watch. You're more than that, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
So what would you say to someone who has someone in their life that's attached to their trauma as their identity? Or many maybe listen and go, wow, maybe I do that. I am the divorced one. I am the one who lost a child. I am the one who had cancer. I am the one who had a business failure. I am the one who had this abuse or mistreatment. What would you say?
So in a phrase, a part of you is... It's not all of you, but yes, people do take on these parts as identity. Okay. Yep. And honestly, I'm going to say this, and this may or may not be popular, but it is one of my mantras. One of my missions is when people do overly identify with one side or the other. Okay, when you were talking about, Ed, like, I'm a victim. It's who I am. As they take it on as an identity, I'm always saying to people, it's a part of you. It's not all of you. And in fact, we all have all of it within us. I am interested in crossing this divide. Every victim has perpetrator parts. Every perpetrator has victim parts, and we polarize because we want to be seen on one side instead of the other. And honestly, I'm working on a show right now that is talking about the victim and perpetrator within all of us. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's hard for people to, this is what happens politically, one side or the other. Like, we all have both sides. And that's hard for people to come to terms with, but it is one of my missions and one of my mantras is, you know, you're not going to be able to heal from your trauma unless you look at the ways you have perpetrated, either within yourself or others. Okay. So this polarity of us and them, I'm interested in breaking down that wall and bridging the commonality in all of us.
Well, you would change culture if you could do that, because
I think
you've changed so many lives today, but that would change culture. Just, I'm so grateful for today, but that idea that we both have perpetrator and victim is true.
Yep.
And hard to accept.
Yes.
And we embracing the victim part of ourselves, ironically, isn't all that difficult. Embracing the perpetrator part of us, that's a whole other conversation. And today's conversation was riveting. I hope everybody stayed to the end, because even right here towards the very end, there were some breakthroughs in there for me. I got to tell you, Frank, I enjoyed this so, so much. And I'm very, very grateful that we've met. And I've told you already, I think we're going to do this again. I really would
love to do this again. Absolutely.
You're incredible, brother. And again, guys, I love this. Trauma blocks love and love heals trauma. That is one of my favorite things I've ever heard. And he's the author of Transcending Trauma. You guys should go get that book and you guys should share this show. It's the fastest growing show on planet Earth for a reason, because we change people's lives every week by bringing you the best of the best. And Dr. Frank Anderson certainly fits that description. Frank, thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It was awesome. All right, everybody.
Thank you for doing what you're doing.
I'm going to keep doing it, brother. And hopefully
you're part of it. You're part of the solution.
And I want to have you back. I know that we're going to do this again. So, hey, everybody, please share this. And I just want to tell you all, God bless you and max out your lives.
This is the Ed Milet Show.